and a former director of the universe. And I'm really glad to be here, and welcome to the newcomers. Boy, I'm really glad there's newcomers here tonight. I love people that are new. Takes me back to when the feelings that I had when I was brand new. And also congratulations to Jeff for the birthday, wherever he went. Oh, there, it's around here somewhere. Anyway, 2 years. That's really fantastic. But the newcomers, you know, the other night I was thinking about how we got into a discussion about how we felt when we first came in. And I can remember when I was brand new in these meetings, and I didn't want any part of it. I didn't think, you know, I had some jackass tell me that, you know, you could stay sober and like it. And I thought maybe he can, but not me. That wasn't for me. I wasn't here to stay for a long time. I came in here because I didn't think I was alcoholic. I wasn't an alcoholic in the beginning, actually. But I had met this girl, and she thought I was an alcoholic. And so she had a friend that had come to AA and had a liver problem and got rid of the liver problem. So she thought maybe she'd take me to this meeting. And I said, okay, I'll go. I would have went anywhere. I just wanted to get married to her. It didn't matter where she took me. And I went to this AA meeting with her, and the guy that was speaking that night told my story. I mean, and I thought she put him up to it. I didn't have an ego or nothing like that, but I thought she told him my story because he is telling it. And but the thing was, as he, when he got to the point that I was in my life at that time, then he continued on, and it was like hearing my future from this guy. So I didn't know if I was alcoholic when I came out of that meeting, but I knew that if he was, I was, and so I had him investigated. And, you know, I had people checking him and checking it out. And 2 weeks later, they said they gave me the rundown. And I said, well, that guy's an alcoholic, so that makes me one. Well, anyway, so this girl, this was 2 weeks later, she decided I was well enough to get married to me. Bad mistake, but in any event, I'll go through all these, a lot of different marriages, and you better listen, pay attention, because they come. Some of them go by quick, and that was one of them. I mean, I'll be forever grateful to her for bringing me to these doors, but you know, that one didn't last as long as most of the marriages. Well, I'll go back and start out a little bit in the back, way back. We're supposed to tell a little bit of what it used to be like, what happened, how come it didn't change much. And in my case, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. First of all, I was a functioning drunk. I had a job. And as a matter of fact, I had a good job when I was working. And I was working with in the savings and loan business. And I was in my 20s, and I had worked my way up in this savings and loan business, and to the point where I got to the point where they couldn't give you raises anymore. So they started giving you titles. And I became a vice president of the savings and loan. I was in my late 20s. And I remember just before they did that, the president of that savings and loan didn't even know who I was. He didn't know my name. But then they had a Christmas party. And after the Christmas party, he wanted to know my name. You know, who was that guy? And so, anyway, my job, this is way back now. First of all, my sobriety day is October the 10th, 1971. And so what happened was that in this time period, before that, the same as the real estate market was kind of like it is now. It was really in the dumps, and the foreclosures were rampant. And my job there was to take care of these developments out in Cucamonga and all that, get them sold, get them finished and get them sold. So it's a great job for me because I didn't have to go in the office. I'm all by myself out here, you know, out in all those areas out there. And I absolutely had a blast. And but I started crashing company cars all the time, you know, because I was working. Then I would go collect rents from these properties we foreclosed on, and then that would take me to the bar where I drank in, or out to the racetrack, wherever I wanted to go. But that was what happened. And so one day the president called me into his office and closed the door, and he sat down and he said, he started telling me about a brother-in-law he had. Who had had a drinking problem, and they sent him away to some dry out center somewhere and everything. He spent a whole lot of time telling me about this guy. You know, and I remember walking out of there, and my my perception, I couldn't wait to get home to my then wife to tell her that I was really moving up in this place because the president had sat down and started telling me family secrets. You know, that was kind of my perception, and everything in my life has always been how I perceive it to be, even today. You know, and perception is a kind of a funny thing, and it changes over time. Somebody said this not too long ago in a meeting about perception. They said that in the 1920s, Charlie Chaplin was probably the most well-recognized person in the whole world because of the movies that started and all that stuff. And so in Paris, France, they decided to have a Charlie Chaplin look-alike contest. And Charlie Chaplin happened to be in Paris at the time. So a bunch of his buddies thought it would be funny, you know, if he had entered the contest. So he entered the contest and he came in third. See, so that's kind of like perception. There was a few people, some judges in there that, you know, the perception was somebody else. Anyway, so my perception was that I was really doing well in this savings and loan, even though, my days were numbered. And my days were numbered not only there, but they were numbered in the house that I was living in. I had three kids and a wife, and it was coming Christmas time. And this was in Huntington Beach, and so my first present that I opened was an iron, and my second one was a toaster, and I knew my days were numbered in that household, and they were. And I moved out and moved into one of these singles places that they had at the time, and I can remember so vividly how this hole that I had in my gut, you know, how I was feeling about, but I didn't think drinking wasn't the problem. Drinking was a solution. So anyway, I moved out of that house and I moved into this place, and I set up a business. Finally, I quit this job there because they were getting hot on my tail and did what every good alcoholic does, start your own business. But the trouble was that I was living in this place and I didn't want to answer the door, and I would peep out the little peephole they had in the door to see who was there, and I set up my telephone so that it would ring so many rings, and then I could pick it up, see who it was, see if I wanted to answer. I was afraid to go to the mailbox, and I was getting paid by, if I got anything, it was checks that were coming in the mail. I was afraid to open the mailbox. I don't know why. I hadn't talked to Uncle Sam in three or four years, and you know, but I still was afraid of that mailbox. And so my life began to sort of unravel. But right about that time in Huntington Beach, they decided to start a little league. And my sons were right at that age. Two of my sons were right at that age. And so I went to this meeting for the first meeting of the little league. It was bigger than about twice as big as this meeting. And it was such a big turnout that they decided to break it into two different sections. By the end of that night, I was the president of the Huntington Valley Little League. Now, they didn't know what they were getting into because the guy that they picked to be the president of the other Little League that they decided to pick, I met him the first time I walked into an AA meeting. So that's what they chose that night. And so we would sit and argue about the size of hot dogs and all this stuff. And, you know, my whole purpose was to take this team that I was going to develop, and we were going to Williamsport, Pennsylvania for the Little League World Series no matter what. I mean, that was my whole idea. And so as a drunk, I began to, these kids, getting them out on the Little League field, not just in baseball season. This is around the clock. You know, we were practicing all year round. And the parents don't really care if you're a drunk as long as you're winning. And, you know, and we were winning. And now I don't want to hold you in suspense or anything. We didn't make it out. We didn't make it to Williamsport, Pennsylvania. We never even made it out of Orange County, California. But we did have a good team. We had a great team. And so these kids, as I look back on it now, it astounds me that I could even have gotten away with it at that time. To give you an example, at the end of the year of this presidency of this league, it was the final day where they're giving out the awards. And it was a big deal. They had the mayor was going to speak there, the chief of police, all these people were going to speak. And that morning, and I was supposed to speak there as the president of the league. And so that morning, a buddy that I used to drink with in Pasadena called me up, and he was staying in a hotel downtown. And he said, "Come on down, have a drink." And I went, "Nah, man, I can't today, you know. I had to go give a talk in front of a whole of these kids and all, you know, for the whole Little League deal. He said, "Come on, Dan. You can have one drink." Yeah. And I thought about it, and if you're an alcoholic, you know I went down there, and so I went down to meet this guy, and the next thing I can remember, I was falling off the stage. In front of my kids, in front of my wife, in front of the chief of police, in front of everybody else. But that's kind of like a little bit of where I was coming from in those days before I got here. After I got here, I want to just tell you to try to paint another part of the picture. You know, when I first got here and we started in working the steps, they started talking about resentments, and I didn't know really what a resentment was. I didn't understand it, you know. So I began to think hard about it, and the sponsor that I had made me really work on it. All of a sudden, it got to me that my way of resentments coming out was that if you were my friend, if you were a friend of mine, then I would resent something that you liked. That was my form. That was the form that I used. I didn't realize it until I got an AA. But anyway, all my friends were L.A. Ram lovers. And so I became an L.A. Ram hater. I mean, that was the whole deal. And so there's all these guys, and they said, well, you can't do that. I mean, you've got to pick a team. So I said, okay, I'll pick the Minnesota Vikings, you know, because they had a really good team going then, Fran Tarkenton, all these guys. And I'd never been to Minnesota in my life, but I said, okay, the Minnesota Vikings are my team. So all of a sudden, one day, the day came where the Rams were playing the Vikings, you know, and so we're all going. And I got all decked out. The Minnesota Vikings, they called them the Purple People Eaters. They were like purple was their colors. So I was spray-painted purple. I had purple shoes on. I had a purple big hat, a horn, the whole shot, you know, just totally, totally out of it. I think there was about 18 of us, and we go to this place called Julie's before the game. And Julie's was a bar across the street from the old Coliseum, and it had a swimming pool in the middle of it, a big swimming pool in the middle of this bar. It wasn't meant for swimming. But we go there before the game, and we're just totally blasted, and I get over to the game, and I start tooting this horn. And the Minnesota Viking guy runs it halfway down the field on the opening kickoff, and all of a sudden I'm yelling and screaming, you don't do that, you know, in that Coliseum. Pretty soon there's tomatoes and eggs and everything are coming at me. So when the game was over, underneath on these clothes I had all kinds of anti-Ram sayings, you know, pray, deacon, pray, and blow, Gabriel, blow, all these anti-old Ram player things. And, you know, so these Ram people didn't like that. And after the game, we go back to Julie's, and I can remember in a haze, all of my buddies called me Willie then, and I can remember all of a sudden you hear this chant, you know, Willie in the pool, Willie in the pool. So I knew where I was headed, and I had my drink. I remember having this martini like this, and as they were lifting me up, I made sure it didn't spill, you know, into the swimming pool. And underneath these clothes, underneath I had other clothes on that said were pro Ram things, case the Rams won. So I thought it would be so I start ripping off these clothes to show them, you know, this stuff, and it didn't look that way. If you were watching what was happening, you know, I'm ripping off my clothes to get to the undergarments, but you know, it just didn't look that way. And Julie was over there saying, "Get that guy out of there and get the police and all that." And I'll never forget, as they dragged me up out of the pool, over the edge of the pool, my eyes went to the back of the room, which is about as far as that wall back there. And that day in Huntington Beach, a guy had told his son he'd take him to the Ram football game. And he could take somebody with him. And he decided to take my son. And I was looking into the eyes of my son sitting at the back of the room who had just watched that spectacle. And the look in his eyes were, "Please don't acknowledge me. Please don't acknowledge me." Many years later, he was at a meeting one time, and somebody asked him after I told that story, did he remember that? Did he remember that incident? He remembered. They remember. They remember the things you do like that. So I got to tell you about that kid, that same kid. After I got an AA, you know, and this is a little story about how, thank God, sometimes I don't get everything that I want. And After I got in AA, this kid, it was growing up, and I wanted him to work for me. I had this piddly little business going on. I wanted him to work in my office, and he didn't want to do it. He just wasn't interested in it. So he was working in recreation departments and stuff, and I just didn't like the way it was going. He wasn't doing what I wanted him to do. He wasn't going to college the way I wanted him to go to college. He wasn't majoring what I thought he should be majoring in. And so I was kind of raising hell with him. And my sponsor finally got a hold of me one day and said, "Leave that kid alone. Let him do what he wants to do." And, it was hard, really hard, but I did. And so I tried to back off. And one day some friends of mine were saying, "Hey, I saw your kid refereeing a basketball game between Huntington Beach and Newport Beach High School." He said, "Could tell it was your kid the way you run across the court. You run just like you do." And so I said, "Oh, cool." And so I heard he was doing this and that. And then pretty soon somebody else said, "Yeah, I saw him doing a UCI Irvine, Nevada game." And not too long after that, and this would be about 18 years now ago, he called me up one day and he said, "Dad, the NBA is expanding to 3 referees." He said, "They've invited me to go to Philadelphia for a tryout." And so he was 28 years old then, and I thought, no way. In my mind, I was thinking, no, that ain't going to happen, but I'm not going to tell him that. And so anyway, he went back there and he called me up and he said, "They've made me an NBA referee, and I'm starting out next week." And this has been my fun pleasure to watch this kid over the last 17 years throw Magic Johnson out of basketball games, and get Shaq for crossing over the line, and all kinds of things have happened. But he's leading a life that he wanted to lead, and he's doing a fantastic job. He's all the referees, he's the main referee wherever he does it now. Wherever, whatever game he does today, he's the senior referee in that game. Matter of fact, this last playoff game, the Lakers in Boston, the night of the final playoff game, I got home from my Wednesday night stag meeting, and there was a message that said that he had been picked to referee that game, and did I want 2 tickets? Did I want 2 tickets? Like, he's out, like, is he crazy? Yeah. So I had another kind of fun story. When I got up there to get these tickets, you go to will call to get them, and I took a buddy, AA buddy with me, and the ticket price on it said $490. And as I was walking away, there's a whole bunch of people who were standing around this will call place, and the guy says, "You have 2 tickets?" And I went, "Yeah." He says, "I'll give you $4,000 for them." Woo! Man, if that wouldn't have been an NBA ticket, I swear to God, I'd have sold that in a second, but I couldn't do it. Anyway, but it's really been fun having that happen and the things that have come about because of that. I'm an appraiser, and one day I was in this guy's house, and I go in there, I go through houses in the kids' rooms, and so there's a big poster in this guy's kid's bedroom. They had a picture of Magic Johnson and Kevin Johnson fighting for the basketball, and in the back of this picture is my kid with a whistle hanging out of his mouth, sort of muted in the picture. So I went down, I told this guy, I said, "Hey, you got a picture of my son in your kid's bedroom." He said, "Really?" And so he walks up the stairs and he looks at these two black guys, and then he looks at me, and I went, "No, the guy in the background. So anyway, that's really been fun. But to see, one of the things about that was that I didn't get my way, and things that I sometimes just don't think are going to work out. Another story I'm going to tell you about not getting my way, a little tougher to tell. But let's go back. I had, after I got sober, I'd moved to San Diego for a while, and I lived I had gotten a divorce, and I, from this gal that brought me into AA, and I was living in a place in San Diego, and this girl walked by the front of my apartment, and she had a t-shirt on that says, "Marry me and fly for free." And I thought, man, that's a good idea. And so, so I did. And that lasted, like most of my marriages, like 10 years, But so at the end of this 10-year cycle, we had separated, but we're still friends. I mean, she's living there, and I'd moved back here. And I met an AA gal for the first time. and so we were dating, but I was still married to the gal in San Diego. And one day this girl tells me, she says, "I'm pregnant." And I went, oh, man, you know. He said, I said, what are you going to do about that? And she said, and I was thinking, well, she's 40 years old, and she's never had any children. She's a year and a half sober. And I could tell by looking in her eyes, she wasn't going to do nothing about it. And I thought, ooh. So I went to down to my stag meeting, where I always go whenever I get into trouble, which is a lot. But anyway, I go down to my stag meeting, and I lay the situation out as I see it, my perception of the whole thing. So the first guy that shares afterwards says, well, boy, I wish I'd had a father like you, a sober father like you when I was growing up. I go, well, that's what I want out here. And the next guy, says, maybe this is your chance to raise a child in sobriety. And that's not what I want to hear. The third jackass says, well, you'll only be 73 when he graduates from high school. And anyway, he just graduated a few years ago. And I got to tell you something, the greatest thing that ever happened to me, and he's heard me tell it from the podium. I mean, he knows what my feelings probably were back in those times. But I didn't get what I wanted. Thank God. Thank God I didn't get what I wanted. Because this kid is the light of my life. He's a kid. He's 21, 22 years old now. But he took me through the whole thing again. Sober. I got to go through whole Little League thing again. This is 25 years later. You know, going through Little League and all this stuff that goes through it. I didn't do much better with his team either. But anyway... I started having a little more fun, and to top it off, this kid is in a seminary in Illinois. I mean, geez, I said, a seminary? I couldn't believe it. I started thinking back when I was his age. That would be the last thing, furthest thing would ever be on my mind, you know. But anyway, that's some of the great things that can happen to you in here when you don't get what you want. Thank God. Anyway, I'll go back to kind of where I started. When I got here, I did not believe that that I was an alcoholic. I did not believe that I was going to have any fun in AA. And I didn't start doing this thing the way you're supposed to do it at all. In the very first 6 months, I told you I got married 2 weeks later. And so we would come to our one meeting a week, faithfully, speaker meeting, sit in the back, and wait till the meeting was over and take off. You know, that was kind of the way it started. I didn't even get a book. And just listening to the speakers. And it was interesting, but I mean, and I wasn't drinking, but that doesn't mean that I was really doing anything that was promoting any acceptance of Alcoholics Anonymous or getting into the work in Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, after about 6 months, we were at a meeting, and it was my 6 month birthday, as a matter of fact. And so this guy sitting next to us was a grizzly old AA guy. I've got to describe him because he later on becomes my sponsor. But he weighed about 400 pounds, and he had one eye that went that way and one eye that went that way. And he was a former member of the Chicago mobsters. And I thought, man, this guy scared the living crap out of me. And so he said, my wife was telling him, and it was my 6 month birthday, and he said, well, what does his sponsor say about that? And she said, oh, he doesn't have a sponsor. And so this guy goes over and gets a pamphlet and brings it over and gives it to me. And I didn't want to have much to say to him, at least not at that point in time. And it was one of those chance meetings where he really didn't know really who I was. It was just one of those things where he was passing it out. And it wasn't too much longer after that. One day I decided that I deserved a time out to the racetrack. I loved to go to the racetrack. And I was by myself, and I deserved it. So I went to the track, and I saw this guy standing there walking around. And he didn't see me. He didn't know who I was. But anyway, I knew who he was. And I knew that he was going to take a drink that day. I knew he was. So I started following him all around Hollywood Park. And I was hiding behind big pillars that they have there and watching like this, you know, look over, because I kept waiting, as I knew he was going to do it. And had he done that day, had he taken a drink, I'd be dead today. I'd be dead, I'd be gone, because I was waiting for a way out of here. I was looking for a way out, and that was my way out. That would have told me that this thing doesn't really work. But that scared the hell out of me. You know, the guy did not take a drink. And so, you know, and it's something like that. If you're new in here tonight, things like that will happen to you. Another case was that I had put together the biggest deal I had ever put together in, up to that time in AA. I was probably maybe 4 months sober. And I had to go to Long Beach to meet the guy who was going to pay me. And we had a meeting for the first time. He was in charge of paying me when I was going to get paid and how I was going to get paid. So anyway, I go down there and he wants to go to lunch. And he takes me into this bar. Dark, dingy, smelly bar. And right away, they all knew him. Everybody knew this guy. And we sat down, and he said, "What do you have?" And I didn't even blink, not even a second. Just scotch and water, just like that. And so he ordered a drink, and then they brought the drinks, and there was a lot of water and stuff on the table. And my higher power, I believe, at that point in time, decided to have him go to the bathroom. And I sat there, and one side of my head said, "Well, you're in Long Beach now. You know, those guys up in Newport and everything, they're not going to know, you know, if you take this drink. If you just take one, if you just have this drink, it'd be all right. Besides, you've been around here for 4 months. You know all about AA. And, you know, so you'll be all right." And that was what one side was saying. But the other side said, "Hey, they might not know about it up in Newport, but you're going to know about it, pal." And so I took that drink and I poured it out into the water glasses that were sitting on the table. And I got to tell you something. Over the many, many years, the 38, 9 years that have passed since that time, there's not a day doesn't go by that I don't think about that moment in time, that split second moment in time where that choice could have been a different choice. And I also believe I'd be dead, insane, or in jail right now had I taken that drink that day. I came that close. If you're new, you're going to have challenges like that facing you sometime or another along the way. And I'm hoping and praying that you make the right choice. This sponsor, anyway, ultimately I get this guy to be my sponsor. You know, I had to follow him around. I was scared to ask him. It was like asking a girl to go steady for the first time. What if he said no? You know, and so I was following him around from meeting to meeting to meeting. And every time I go up to about to stop to ask him, you know, somebody else would come up and start talking to him. And so I'd have to back off and walk away. And finally I asked him, you know, and he said, "Okay." And he said, "Well, this is how we're going to do it. You're going to take each one of these steps in order, and you're going to write them out. You're going to write out each step, and then you're going to sit down with me, and you're going to read it to me, and we'll go over it." And man, right away, my head started going, you know. He's going to know how stupid I am if I have to start writing this stuff out. And I thought, you know, your mind flashes so fast. The minute that happened, my mind flashed back to high school, where my father was a journalist, and I was in a journalism class. And the instructor knew my father, and they expected big things out of me. And I did not perceive myself at that time to be any kind of a writer or at all. Part of what I do today is writing, but not in those days. I didn't think that. And so, you know, my mind went to this time when this instructor said, for the class final, you have to write a short story. And it has to be just so many words and so many sentences and so on. And so, I no way I could do that. So I go down to the library and I get a book, Bill Stern's Short Stories. And I find a story that fits everything you need, the number of words and the paragraphs and the whole thing. And I completely redo this story, completely rechange all the names, places, dates, everything. But it's basically the same story. It's all written that way. And so we turn in the test the next day, and the teacher, all of a sudden, he says, "Well, I have a story here I want to read, you know, from James in our class." And I go, "Geez, oh, no." And all my buddies, he starts reading this story. And all my buddies are going, "You didn't write that, you know." And I'm going, "Oh." And so he gets all finished, and he said, "You know, we're going to put this in the high school annual as the best short story of the whole season." And I'm thinking, "Oh, geez, man, I could see my father, you know, reading that." Then the next day I get there, he said, "Reader's Digest has a short story of America contest every year, and we're going to send James a story back to the Reader's Digest." And right away, I could see Bill Stern, you know, knocking on my door. "Hey, man, you stole my story. You know, this is all went through my head the minute this guy said, you have to write something out. You know, that all just chomped right through my head that I was going to have to write. So anyway, I started working with this sponsor and we started writing out these steps. And I finally I get to the fourth step and it's time to do the fifth. And he's a racetrack guy himself. I told you, I saw him at the other track. So he said, well, let's go down to Del Mar and you can read your fifth step as we go down there. So, man, I didn't want to read it because there was stuff in there that I didn't want anybody to ever know, ever. But I did, and I knew he was going to think I was really terrible when I got all finished with it. And it was really a low point up till that time, it seemed like, in my AA life. And when I get all finished, he says, you think that's all pretty bad stuff, don't you? And I said, well, yeah. He said, how would you like to live with the fact that you choked a man to death? And man, I swear to God, everything just fell right off of me right now. And I looked at, and you know, I never asked him any more about that, and he never told me any more about that. But that made me realize at that moment in time that my story was so nothing in comparison to some people's, and that all these issues that I had that were so terribly important, I thought in my mind, were really nothing. Really, and the bottom line is that the stuff that was in there that was I thought was so important, I'll tell it now it doesn't mean anything. The power's gone completely out of it. But I didn't think that at the time I was doing it. So if you're new and you're beginning to go through these steps, just realize that the end result is that your life is going to feel like, you know, a big weight will come off of your shoulders and you can begin to live. This is the place, Alcoholics Anonymous is the place where you live, where I began to live, where I began to have fun. You know, I always thought I had fun when I was drinking. I mean, if you ask me, all these perceptions that I had, for instance, you know, I was the type of guy in a bar that you start talking about religion. And I was the first guy to jump up and say, there's no such thing, you know, you're all weak, you're sick if you believe in that. And that's the way I believe. That's what I really believe then. And so I get to Alcoholics Anonymous and I start working in that book and every other word is God. And there, you know, and I had to slam the book shut every time it came to God. I could buy everything in the book, could buy all the stories, go through all the relating to the stories, relating to the circumstances. But when it came to God, I just couldn't do it. And so luckily this same sponsor told me, had gone through the same thing when he was new. And so he started leading me very gently through it. And I began to notice something around here. I began to notice that the people who were happy and the people that had this shining light in their eye all believed in God. They all had some kind of faith and I just wished I could get it. I wished I could understand it. I wish I could believe it. But for so long I couldn't. But anyway, this guy just started telling me, you just start praying no matter whether you believe it or not. Just do it. And start reading this book and start sharing about that. And I remember going to a meeting one time. This is early on in that beginning. And it was the first time I'd ever been to one of these. It was a real small meeting where everybody's sitting around in a circle and they're going around the room. So I know it's coming to me sooner or later. You know, it's going to be my turn. And I at that point in time, I did not want to talk about anything. I didn't want to talk in a meeting. I'd only gone to speaker meetings. You know, I just didn't. You know, I thought, oh my God. So when they started talking, I never heard one thing anybody said because I was thinking about what's going to happen when it gets to me. What am I going to say? And so the only thing I could think of was this subject. So when it got to me, I said, you know, I don't understand a higher power. I don't understand God. I don't believe in a God. And I just happened to be sitting next to a Jesus freak, and he was next. And man, I want to tell you, I remember after that guy was done with me, I said, I'm never coming to a meeting like this again, ever in my life. I mean, I'm going to speaker meetings, and that's it. Yeah, you know, and the feeling that I had even in the... One of the meetings that I went to that was usually a speaker meeting, once a month was a participation meeting. I didn't know that. And I went to it one time, and I was sitting out in the audience, and I knew the person who was leading it. I knew this girl. And I thought, oh, man, she's going to pick on me. I know she's going to pick on me. And so I was hiding. There was a guy that was a pretty fat guy, and I was sort of hiding behind him so she wouldn't see me. And all of a sudden, she says, well, I'd like to hear from Jim. She goes like that. Oh, God, my heart sank right into my shoes. And it turns out this guy's name was Jim. Oh, man, I felt so good. And he stood up. But that's how afraid I was of getting involved in this and getting into anything to do with a believing in a higher power. But this sponsor started saying, okay, you know, I want you to, do you believe that this group, he started that way, you know, do you believe that this group is more powerful than you are? You know, and I could buy that. And I said, yeah, I believe that. He said, well, then that's a good start. That's a beginning. So anyway, working and working and working on that, ultimately, I woke up one morning and I believed that I don't know how it happened. I still to this day don't know how it happened, but it happened. And I'm not sure that I can describe it all. I can't describe my higher power to you in physical terms. But I can tell you this, that I believe, I have faith. I know, for instance, I know that my higher power never, ever does anything that is negative to me. I may think it's negative. My perception may be that it's negative, but it's always been a prelude. When something that I think is negative is a prelude to something fantastic that's going to happen down the road that I don't know anything about yet. I'll give you a little example. There's a Super Bowl. We got a Super Bowl coming up. A Super Bowl party one year. And it was one of those deals where you get like $100 at the quarter and then $150 at the half, and it was $250 at the final. 4 seconds to go to the half. And I had the score that you have to have to get the $150. And I was jumping and running up and down. And so the team that had the ball had 96 yards to go for a touchdown. And I knew that wasn't going to happen in 4 seconds. And so this jackass fades back and throws a pass out to the side. Somebody intercepts it and bang-o. The whole score changed right within 4 seconds. They took the $150 right out of my pocket. You know, and then ultimately, though, at the end of the day, at the end of the game, guess who won the $250? I did. Why? Because that guy intercepted that pass. Now, my higher power doesn't always work that fast. But that's the perception that what I think is negative today turns out to be a positive down the road. This same sponsor taught me a whole lot of other things. If you're new, maybe you can catch some of them. The one that I love the most, for me, is that he said, you don't have any more bad days. No bad days. You may have bad moments. You may have a bad hour. You may even have a bad half a day. But no bad days. There's no such thing. He said, you don't have any problems. He said, you only have challenges. He said, there's a big difference between a challenge and a problem. He said, a problem is like what you had when you got here. And I had a lot of them, I thought. My perception when I got here was that I had problems that were beyond belief, problems that were insurmountable, that I couldn't ever possibly get through. I can't even remember what they are today, because today I've got challenges that far exceed, I believe, what those were when I got here. But that's the difference, is that today I believe personally, for me, that I can walk through any challenge that anyone can put before me. And I don't care what it is. I think I can walk through it. Why? Because I've seen people walk through it for the last 38, 39 years. Walk through it. We had a guy in the Newport Club many, many, many years ago who, and I watched this guy carefully because I really wasn't sure. I was still questioning. But this guy had two little kids and a real beautiful wife and everything. And one day a thing started growing on his neck. And I thought, man. And all of a sudden they announced to the club that they were going to have a second birthday for him because it was going to be his last. And, you know, and so I watched him because he knew and I knew. And he never, ever once flinched. I never saw the guy in a negative mood. I only saw him happy. And he passed away happy and sober. And boy, that taught me a whole lot. He taught me, for me anyway, that I can walk through anything that's put before me in the physical area. Anything, I don't care what it is. And we've got a guy in our stag down there that has AIDS, cancer, every other thing, all rolled up into one. And he's the happiest guy in the whole room. The happiest guy in the whole room.
I had a guy that worked for me here not too long ago, and his nephew's in the audience, I believe, who came down with brain cancer, and watched him, held his hand for the last 3 or 4 months. And they'd bring him down in a van to bring him to the stay. And you'd ask him, Kenny, how you doing? Never had it so good. And I believed him because I knew him. I've known him for 20 years. I knew him. So that's what can happen in here. If you change your whole concept from a perception of having only challenges and not problems, it changed my life. It changed my life completely. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, for me anyway, is all about. The other thing is, if you're new in here, you know, I can't understand the people that want to go out and test again and you know, do these things again, because to me the most fun I have are the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was brand new, I couldn't understand how I was going to make a transition from the guys that I drank with to the guys that were in AA as friends. Because I was so tight with these people, I thought. I mean, I'd grown up since a little kid with some of them, and I thought, they're my friends, you know, and I just can't understand it. And I don't know these people in AA, and how do you make the shift? How do you make the changeover? And it just, all I can tell you is that if you keep coming to meetings, it happens slowly, but it happens. Not that you give up those old friends. They're still my friends, but I don't have anything in common with them anymore. Matter of fact, they threw a party. The one guy throws a party every year for his birthday, and every year they invite me to go. And so a few years ago, I went there, and I told him, I said, you know, and the same guy starts telling the same story twice, I'm out of here. And you know, and they told me some stories about me that I didn't even know. I completely had forgot about. But you know, that's kind of like what Alcoholics Anonymous is like. If you really get involved in AA, and you miss a meeting, you're going to get phone calls the next day. Now, where were you? What happened? Why weren't you at the meeting? I was five years sober, and I decided to go back to the little bar that I drank in Costa Mesa. And at the time, I didn't understand what was driving me to go back there. But anyway, I went back there. Now, I had not had a call from any of those guys in 5 years. I mean, and they were like my very best friends. I mean, I was with them every single day. And I walked into this bar, and the same guys were sitting in the same seats, and one of them turned around and went, oh, hi, Jim. You know, like I hadn't even been gone for 5 minutes, man. I've been gone for 5 years. And so I was sitting around there trying to figure out, you know, why am I here? And about that time, the father-in-law of one of my best drinking friends walked in. And this guy, I said, hey, Jerry, how you doing? Let me buy you a beer. And I bought him a beer, and I was walking out, and I began to realize that that guy who was now a drunk, had been the CEO of a major corporation in America. And I believe today that my higher power had me go back there to see him, to see that, to realize that that could be me. That could so easily be me, being in the shoes that this guy was in. But that I had found, luckily for me, and my family, and all the people that surround me. If you're an alcoholic in here, they say that we negatively impact 50 people around us. 50 people. You take all the people in here that are alcoholics here tonight, and multiply that by 50 people. That's a number of people that are negatively impacted by our drinking. I mean, but that wouldn't have mattered to me back then. I could have cared less, you know, because drinking was that important for me to get it done today. It was so important to get down to that bar at 5 o'clock because something big was going to happen. I don't know what it was, but something big was going to happen. And, you know, this feeling in my gut was that I just had to get there. Nothing big ever happened, but I always knew that today, something big was going to happen and I had to be there. I can remember one time that I even had a job where I had to was supposed to go to Los Angeles and pick up a major check for a deal and bring it from Los Angeles to this escrow company. But it would have meant being gone up there when the 5 o'clock time came. I sent a messenger. There was no way I was going up there. Strictly because I would miss being at that bar at 5 o'clock. That was the only reason that I did that. I mean, that's how important drinking was. Well, today, Alcoholics Anonymous is that important to me. I would go anywhere, do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous.
If you're new, that doesn't mean you have to love everybody in here. That's, you know, we have our groups. I have groups that love to do the same things that I like to do. I like to go to the horse races. I like to go to football games. I like to do all that kind of thing. You'll find that group in here that likes to do that you will become pals with. Maybe you like to ride motorcycles. You will find a group that likes to ride motorcycles. Maybe you like to go hiking or whatever you do in your life that you like to do. You will find people in here that like to do that with you. I mean, that's just kind of like the way it is. And it's such a fascinating adventure to go through and to watch, especially to see people that come in and they're so, you know, they're so out of it in the beginning with their drinking and using or whatever it is that they do. I never did anything but drink. And, you know, when I think about it and I watch all these people today that come in using, I would have done that if it was available, but when I'm back in my drinking days, you can find anybody that sell anything like that. I mean, the booze was all you could get. You know, today I understand you can just go out and find all this other stuff anywhere you want to find it. Not in my day. Boy, that was hard to find. You know, it was really hard to find. Today, but I'm glad that I was just a drunk. I mean, that I didn't get into something else because it might have really impacted me, maybe would have killed me. Yeah, if you're new, I hope that you'll keep coming back in here till you want to come back in here. And, I'm just going to close with a couple of things. One of the reasons is that if you come in here, you're going to find a life that's far beyond anything that you've ever imagined, that you could ever imagine. You're going to find that everything in your life gets better. Every part of your life gets better, and it gets better each year, at least for me. Each year that goes by, it's a better year. I don't know why. Not necessarily everything in the year is better. Financially, it might not necessarily be better. But things are just better. Just your life in general is better. And you begin to work with other people, and that's what's been I get so much joy out of that. I mean, I meet people in here that I would not meet any other way. Would not meet unless they were in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the only place that I would meet him would be in here. I can remember one day driving a guy who I was sponsoring at the time, looking at his feet in my car, thinking, those feet have walked on the moon. And now, how would I have ever met anybody like that if I wasn't in Alcoholics Anonymous? I wouldn't have met him just walking down the street. So anyway, if you come in here, your life is going to expand way beyond anything you could ever imagine. I just want to say thank Paul for asking me to come down here tonight. I want to leave you with the idea that I am just today trying to be the dog. I mean, trying to be the man my dog thinks I am, and my dog's sitting out in the car right now waiting for me. But and also my parting remark always is that I believe for me, and I believe for each and every one of you that's in this room tonight, that you haven't had your best day yet. Thank you.